Meet the Press. Today's guest, Mr. Fowler Hamilton, newly appointed administrator of the Agency for International Development. Our panel consists of Peter Lissagore, Chicago Daily News, John Hightower, Associated Press, Eli Abel, NBC News, and Lawrence E. Sivak. Here is our moderator.
This is Ned Brooks inviting you to Meet the Press.
Our guest today is the newly appointed head of the nation's foreign aid program, Mr. Fowler Hamilton, the administrator of the Agency for International Development. Now here is the first question from Lawrence E. Spivak, permanent member of the Meet the Press panel.
Mr. Hamilton, over the years, our foreign aid program has come in for considerable criticism. Is there going to be a change in policy under your administration?
Yes, sir, there is.
Can you tell us in what way that change will affect the aid program?
There are going to be two principal changes, I would say, Mr. Spivak. The first change is the change that was laid down by the Congress at the recommendation of President Kennedy when it pulled together our various previous foreign aid programs into one program called the International Development Program. Second change will be we're going to endeavor to run this program as efficiently as we can.
Well, isn't that what every administrator has promised, in effect?
I think that's right.
In what way are you going to be more efficient than the others? What have you done to date in the time you've been in charge of the program?
Well, I took my oath of office on October 3rd, and in the 7 weeks that have passed since then, I've addressed myself principally to three things. First, we have made a detailed review of the personnel of the program. 385 former employees of the program have been dismissed. Secondly, we have put underway a review of the 1,197 projects that constitute the program. That review is about 50% completed. Third, we have arranged to have interviews with the chiefs of each of the 59 missions in each of the 81 countries in which this program operates. More than 60% of those interviews have occurred. That is, I have sent people out to the field to acquaint those gentlemen with the new emphasis and the new spirit of the program.
Mr. Hamilton, have you a clear conception today of what the United States seeks to accomplish by its foreign aid program, and can you tell us what that is?
The present program, Mr. Spivak, has three phases or aspects. It has a military phase, it has a civilian phase, and then the third phase is what the President has referred to as the Alliance for Progress. That deals, as you know, primarily with Latin America.
There were two of our objectives in the past war, as I remember it. One, to win over some of the non-aligned countries, and the other, to stop the progress of communism. Are those still our objectives?
They are. I think I would phrase those two objectives somewhat differently. I would say that the military aspect of our program has as its objective strengthening our allies in such vital areas as Korea and Iran, so that the governments in those areas can withstand attack by the communists from without and subversion by the communists from within. That's the military aspect. The civilian aspect has as its primary objective aiding countries that wish to be independent so that they can continue to maintain their independence and hopefully strengthen themselves on the theory that a society of free and independent states is in the interest of the United States and against that of the communists.
Well, those have always been our objectives, haven't they? We have tried to help Korea in the past. What are we going to do that is new? And what are we going to do that you think may be more effective than what we have done up to now?
Well, as I said earlier, the one thing that is new is the Alliance for Progress. That was initiated last March.
Well, that's in Latin America. I'm talking
about that. Has
to
do with Latin America, yes. The second thing that is new is pulling together into one agency the various previous programs that were scattered around in various agencies, so that it was not in the past as easy as it should be for us now, effectively to administer the military aspect and then the civilian aspect.
We'll continue the questions with Mr. Lissagore.
Mr. Hamilton, in answer to Mr. Spivak's questions, you talked about new and more effective administration of the foreign aid program. I'd like to ask you, do you have new criteria now by which countries qualify for foreign aid?
Yes, we do, Mr. Lissagore. The Congress, on the recommendation of President Kennedy, established in the new act a new criteria. For example, the principal criteria are that we work with those countries and help those countries that are willing to help themselves. That means they must give us some indication that they're really interested in working cooperatively with us on the programs to strengthen their independence.
Now, second. I'm sorry, go right ahead. No, go ahead.
Well, secondly, particularly having to do with the Alliance for Progress, as you know, in the Charter of Punta del Este, the Latin American countries that agreed to cooperate with us under that undertook to undertake certain reforms in their own internal structures, their land ownership, their tax structures, and others designed to advance their economic stability with our assistance.
Now, I understand you've approved a loan for $50 million to Brazil, for example, recently.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Did Brazil subscribe to these reforms, social, political, and economic reforms that the Alliance for Progress calls for in order to get that loan?
Yes. There were, however, some peculiar circumstances relating to that loan, because that loan, as you no doubt know, was part of a general arrangement that was negotiated by Secretary Dillon with Brazil several months ago. Actually, it happened before I became administrator for this agency. And it was designed to strengthen and stabilize the economy of Brazil in light of certain pressures that had been created by the political changes that had occurred down there.
You know,
it is not the typical kind of Alliance for Progress loan, but I do believe it meets the standards.
But aren't you likely, Mr. Hamilton, to get this kind of emergency situation if the Brazilian loan were of a different stripe? And I assume that you mean that there was an emergency need for this loan now. Aren't you likely to get similar situations in other countries where the emergency is so great that we will not be able to apply these new criteria, namely social, economic, and political reforms before they can qualify for the loan?
Well, we're likely to get requests for assistance of that kind. Whether or not we grant it or not is another question.
Mr. Hightower.
Mr. Hamilton, I assume that since you're in the job you're in, you are convinced that the foreign aid program is worth the cost. I'm not sure that all people in this country are convinced that it's worth the cost. In very simple terms, why? Why do you hold this view?
Well, based upon our experience with foreign aid over more than 20 years, there have been, as you know, Mr. Howard, 9 different programs that you would label, that have been labeled by the name foreign aid, and I venture to think that some of the confusion, certainly in my own mind, about foreign aid results from the fact that that phrase has been applied to these 9 different programs. On the basis of the experience with those programs, I think that one is justified in concluding that the previous foreign aid programs and the present foreign aid program are in the national interest of the United States.
Well, is this because some specific result has been achieved? In other words,
yes.
Is it because it's a useful instrument in stopping communism?
Well, I think, if I may say so, that's a little too simple. That's one purpose, but that's not the only purpose. For example, the first 3 of the programs of the 9 that have been called foreign aid programs, land lease, rehabilitation and reconstruction after the war, and the Marshall Plan, have been concluded. They represented very large expenditures, something in the order, as I recall it, of over $60 billion. I think it's generally agreed that those 3 programs, each having a different objective, were successful. The military program, military assistance program, I think it is generally agreed, has been successful, as I said in response to one of Mr. Spivak's question, in protecting certain vital areas. The economic assistance program, I think it is generally agreed, has been successful in strengthening new countries. I think it's too early to tell yet about the Alliance of Progress. Mm. I think it's probably also too early to tell about the development loan program, which President Eisenhower initiated in 1958.
Now, in the programs which are going on today, there's often discussion as to the relative value of aid to the neutrals and aid to allied countries.
Mm-hmm.
course, in the case of Allied countries, there's a great deal of emphasis on military assistance.
That's correct.
Does aid to the Allies in general have priority over aid to neutral countries?
I don't think one could say it has priority, because in the present law, we expend about $5.5 billion. Of the $5.5 billion, $2 billion is virtually earmarked for military aid, so that goes for military aid. The remaining $3 billion is available for allocation either to allies or, as you describe them, neutral. There, the area of judgment does come in, and of course, the test in every case is what's in the interest of the United States.
Where you're serving the interest of the United States, in most cases, it comes down to a question of the position and the achievements in or in relation to a particular country. Do you think it's possible to use foreign aid, perhaps more diplomatically, more deftly, to achieve specific U.S. objectives, to influence the policies and positions of individual countries?
I think the purchase of friendship is a very chancy enterprise. The principal purpose of foreign aid, and as I understand it, is not to buy agreement or disagreement, but it is the expenditure of sums, talking now about the civil side, putting to one side the military side. It's the expenditure of sums which we believe to be in our interest to strengthen countries that are independent.
Mr. Abel.
Mr. Hamilton, you have a number of hot potatoes on your desk at the moment, I understand. One of them has to do with this Volta River project in Ghana. I'm not asking you to anticipate the decision. What I would like to know is what kind of considerations do we take into account in deciding whether or not we do give aid to Ghana?
I would suppose, and it was a matter that, as you know, was largely worked out before I became administrator of this agency, and as you quite properly say, it would be proper for me to comment on a matter that's under consideration, but I would suppose that the kind of considerations that would be weighed would be those that I have mentioned. Is this a project that is likely to strengthen the long-run independence of Ghana?
I'd like to hark back for a moment, if I may, to one of your answers to Mr. Lissigore. You talked about you at least left open the implication that not all requests for aid in the Alliance for Progress would be dealt with, would be acted upon. I wondered about the mechanism. How do we decide that a country has not carried out the basic legal and social reforms that the president insisted upon in announcing the Alliance for Progress, and what happens then? Do we cut off a country, for example, that has been receiving aid?
I don't know how one can answer that in the academic or abstract sense, because...
Well, it's not an academic question, sir, is it? I mean, this is a determination you're going
to
have to make.
Well, the decision isn't academic, but the question of whether or not one's going to cut off aid is abstract and academic, unless you have a particular country before you, isn't it?
Well, what I'm
have
thinking
to weigh
up here is we have had a policy enunciated. The policy says, in effect, that those countries that equip themselves to use aid efficiently, in effect, go to the head of the queue. The implication is that those that are either unable or unwilling to carry out these reforms take what's left. Mm-hmm. How is that going to work?
I suppose it works is that you, in the way that you don't give aid to people that don't comply with the criteria, don't make it available to them.
Mr. Hamilton, I wonder if I could clear up one thing. You mentioned a moment ago that your agency has dismissed some 350 or 400 people.
Mm-hmm.
Were those people excess baggage, or were they unsuited for the job, or were they political appointees, or what was the story?
No, what happened was that when the act was passed, Mr. Brooks, the Congress said that only those employees should be taken over from the old agencies into the new agencies that were needed. So we made a review of those who'd been classified at the lowest civil service rating and had appeal board set up, and determined out of the 845, I think, that were reviewed, that I think it was 350 were not needed. They're now in the process of appealing that.
Mr. Spivak.
Mr. Hamilton, our pledge of billions of dollars to Latin America was dependent upon certain reforms that they instituted. I believe tax reforms, land reforms, and things of that kind.
That's correct.
Can you give us any idea of the progress that they have made thus far?
Yes, I think I can't give it in detail because of the I'm not familiar with the details, but I understand from the people who are primarily concerned that very considerable progress has been made in several countries in the enactment of legislation, for example, increasing income taxes, things of that kind.
Ken, you've only given money now so far, or lent money to Brazil.
That is correct.
What about the other countries? There's
and the other countries were in
we've
the
only got about 7 more months to get rid of all this money.
That's correct. Yes, we have about 7 more months. We are in negotiation and have been in negotiation with countries that looking toward commitments, which if they work out would result in the commitment of well over half of the $1 billion that the president said was the scope of the program.
What do you mean by if they work out?
Well, I mean if the countries will agree to the terms that we're setting.
How soon do you expect to make your other commitments now?
Well, it looks now as though the commitments will be in the order of $1 billion or $1.1 billion from last March, when the program was announced, to this next March.
One other question. Is it one of our aims in giving foreign aid to some of the Latin American countries, particularly to encourage democracy, economic and political democracy in any way at all?
Well, I don't wish to cavil, but the word give is one that I don't think
loan.
Of. I think we spend this money in the interest of the United States, because I try to tell my people that every dollar that goes out of our door should buy a dollar's worth of value for the United States. Meeting your question directly, yes, it is. Because it is our view that a democratic society, or one that is becoming increasingly democratic, is likely in the long run to be a stronger society.
Well, aren't some of the demands we're making, though, on the Latin American countries more likely to perpetuate socialism, since you've asked the government to redistribute land, and most of the reforms are coming on the in a socialistic way, if you will?
No, that certainly is not the case. That is just not the case.
Well, is there an encouragement of free enterprise in these countries?
Yes, there is. Mm-hmm.
In what way, would you tell us?
Well, we're encouraging free enterprise in a variety of ways. We're encouraging it through our loan guarantee program. Which is, as you no doubt know, a program that we have under which we guarantee private investment up to certain terms. The principal criteria that we have in respect to making a loan is to be sure that the enterprise is going to work. And very frequently that means that in order to get the management to have the enterprise work, the government in question must turn to private enterprise. Now, that isn't a doctrinal view. If a state can make an enterprise work, and if the loan is otherwise in the interest of the United States, we, of course, have no objection to making a loan to a state.
Mr. Lissagor.
Mr. Hamilton, Marshal Tito of Yugoslavia recently charged that, and I quote, imperialist interest, unquote, in the United States had been responsible for a delay in the sale of surplus grain to Yugoslavia. And he also claimed that these interests were trying to pressure him into changing his foreign policy. Was there any merit at all in his claim?
Well, I really can't comment on that, because the question of our aid to Yugoslavia is now a matter that's under consideration.
Well, could I broaden the question a little bit? We've heard a good deal about the administration preparing to not have its aid taken for granted in countries around the world, and then we'll take a long, hard look at each country.
That's right.
Is that correct?
That's right.
Well, would you put the Yugoslav aid program, as well as this Volta River project in Ghana, into this category?
Certainly. We're reviewing every program very carefully. In the case of Yugoslavia, as you know, there has been a tapering off of aid over the years. There's been no military aid grant to Yugoslavia for 2 years. The amount of the other types of aid has been tapering off over the years. But you're certainly right that we're going to take a good hard look at every request for aid.
In short, then, we are going to apply certain political criteria here now to foreign aid.
Well, we're going to apply our political criteria of having it in the interest of the United States.
That's what I mean.
Right. If that's what you mean.
Yes. We're going to apply political criteria from our standpoint now.
Well, I just don't quite understand what you mean by political criteria. We're going to try to see to it that we don't expend money for aid that isn't in the interest of the United States.
Well, that's roughly what I mean.
That's what you mean? Yeah.
Mr. Hightower.
I think you defined one of the purposes while ago as being to promote the independence of countries and the economic and social and political strength of countries which receive United States aid. One of the criticisms which has been made about the program by some of its most outspoken critics is that some of the assistance is going to communist countries, Poland and Yugoslavia. Mm-hmm. What justification is there for this?
I assume that the gentleman who authorized the aid in those cases felt that it was in the interest of the United States to do so. In the case of Yugoslavia, and I speak only, of course, as to facts which are well known to you, gentlemen, at the time of the break between Yugoslavia and the Russians, Yugoslavia was completely dependent upon the communist bloc. Very large amounts of aid have been granted since then, I think in the order of $1.85 billion. At the present time, three-fourths of Yugoslavia's trade is with Western Europe. There is a flow of people and money between Yugoslavia and Western Europe and in this country. I think the figures are, for example, that in 1958, 10,000 Americans visited Yugoslavia. 1961, I believe, was 21,000. So that I assume that the gentleman who made those decisions felt that producing that kind of situation with aid was in the interest of the United States and the other Western free democracies.
I'd like to go on with the critics just a bit. One of the charges which is sometimes made against the foreign aid program over the years is that it's filled with, and I quote the phrase, rampant waste. There have been examples of roads built, particularly in Southeast Asia, there was an instance which didn't seem to go anywhere and which broke up in bad weather. There have been a story in fairly recent months about some reducing food being sent to a country in Southeast Asia. Are you contemplating organizational changes which would be designed to eliminate errors where you find they exist?
Well, Mr. Hightower, I think perhaps I can answer that best this way. I don't know what mistakes my predecessors have made, but I can tell you one thing. We're going to be making some. We're spending $5.5 billion a year. Now, there are only five companies in the whole United States that have sales equal to that. And I happen to know some of the men who are heads of those companies, and I think they would tell you that they make mistakes. We're going to do the best we can to eliminate them. But we're not going to eliminate mistakes. We're going to have them. We're prepared perfectly to be judged on the record, on balance.
We have about 3.5 minutes remaining. Mr. Abel.
Mr. Hamilton, you mentioned that we are now giving aid in one form or another to some 81 countries, spending American dollars
that's
in those
right.
countries. Would we make a better showing if we concentrated our aid in a relatively smaller number of countries, those that had a chance of sort of getting over the hump mm-hmm. in an appreciable time instead of scattering it so widely?
That's a very interesting suggestion, and that's one we're considering, and we will give further consideration to it when we have completed our review of the 1,195 projects which are now underway.
How soon do you expect that to be?
That will probably take another 90 days.
I think many people have wondered, at what point does the cutoff stage come? For example, how many countries in Europe, largely recovered from the war, are still getting aid in one form?
Virtually none. In other words, all of the Marshall Plan countries are off.
How about Spain and Yugoslavia?
Spain is getting some, and Yugoslavia is still getting a small amount.
Mm-hmm.
And Greece is getting some.
You do see a cutoff coming fairly soon.
Yes, Japan is off aid, and certainly the test of the success of your program is working yourself out of a job.
Mr. Spivak.
Mr. Hamilton, when the President signed the Foreign Aid Authorization Bill, he said this: "It is my belief that in the administration of the aid funds, we should give great attention and consideration to those nations who have our views of the world crisis. With that in mind, why should we help nations who take sides against us in this fight for survival?
See, his quotation was,
"It is my belief that the administration of the funds, we should give great attention and consideration to those nations who have our views of the world crisis."
That's right. And that is being done.
Why should we give any aid to countries like Poland, for example, which certainly do not have our views of the world crisis?
Well, I suppose the only reason we do it would be because it was in our interest to do it. If it weren't in our interest to do it, we wouldn't do it. Or
how would
it
be? How would it be in our interest to do it, would you say?
In the case of Poland?
Yes.
As I say, I didn't make the agreements under which Poland is now getting aid. I am reviewing as to what we're going to do in the future. I'd be delighted to answer for my actions once I've taken them.
Would you think it can be in our interest to give aid to Nkrumah in view of the position he has taken on this world crisis?
I suppose it can be. I don't know that it would be, but I suppose that it could be. I think, of an analysis that would produce that result.
Mr. Lissagor.
Mr. Hamilton, some months ago, the administration began a campaign to induce other Western countries, Western European countries, to help us share this burden of foreign aid.
That's been very successful.
What progress have
we
made?
Very successful. for example, at the present time, France is extending it to her former colonies in Africa, but extending aid in an amount, grant aid, that is three times per capita as large as the aid that we're expending. Under the aegis of the World Bank and the leadership of Mr. Eugene Black, its principal executive, consortiums have been established that are moving $2 billion of aid into India, moving large hundreds of millions of dollars of aid into Pakistan, into the upper Indus River Valley, in which France, Germany, and other highly industrialized countries are cooperating.
At this point, we're going to have to suspend our questions, and thank you very much, Mr. Hamilton, for being with us.
Thank you, Ned Brooks. In just a moment, we'll tell you how you can obtain a copy of this week's Meet the Press discussion.
This is Leon Pearson. The music is from East Africa, from Tanganyika, the first foreign country to request aid from our Peace Corps. Soon a group of young Americans, civil engineers, surveyors, geologists, will assist this newly emerging nation in a road-building project. On December 9th, Tanganyika will achieve independence. One state is emerging after another. All of Africa is changing at a breathtaking pace. And in recognition of the increasingly vital role of African nations in world affairs, NBC News has established a full-time African News Bureau to coordinate network coverage of that continent. Whatever African development assumes importance in the news, NBC will be on the scene. You're never out of tune with the world when you're in tune with Radio NBC.
Alcoholism is a treatable disease. Many people don't know or understand this fact. Saddest of all, most alcoholics themselves don't know it, but it's true. Alcoholism is a disease, an illness. If you know an alcoholic, you can help him to recover. He is sick, but not hopeless. Visit your Alcoholism Information Center, or for information, write to the National Council on Alcoholism, New York 29, New York. Remember, alcoholism is a treatable disease. Now, more details on Meet the Press. Today's guest was Mr. Fowler Hamilton, Administrator of the United States Agency for International Development. And the panel consisted of Peter Lissagor, Chicago Daily News, John Hightower, Associated Press, Ely Abel, NBC News, and Lawrence E. Spivak. For a printed copy of today's discussion on Meet the Press, send 10 cents in coin and a stamped, self-addressed envelope to Merkel Press, that's M-E-R-K-L-E, Merkel Press, 809 Channing Street Northeast, Washington, D.C. Meet the Press will be heard again next week at the same time, and the guest then will be United States Ambassador to the Republic of the Congo, Edmund A. Gullion. This is the NBC Radio Network. Thank you.